I'm Matt Llewellyn Otten. I'm a third year, last semester, MDiv student focusing on global and community engagement.
My name is Bailey Bronner, and I am also a third year MDiv student. I am on the pastoral track seeking ordination in the Methodist Church.
Well, our travel seminar was led by an alum of BU School of Theology, Laura Rampakir, and it was a trip to Tucson, Arizona, but also to the U.S.-Mexico border and going into Nogales, Mexico. So we were studying immigration and immigration policy, immigration reform, as well as theology tied to the desert, but also for those who are migrating. The policies, how do we talk about these policies in a theological way, formatting it so that we become better advocates for those who are most vulnerable?
One of the other things that we did when we were there is engaged with some of the ministries that are already providing or who are already doing the work in Arizona and in Mexico, so doing justice work in the borderland, some of like the Christian ministries and other advocacy groups. The first wow moment for me is when we arrived in Tucson. We stayed at a church there, First EMC Tucson, which in addition to doing ministry on like Sunday mornings, they also have their basement is a shelter for guests who are sort of awaiting the asylum process. And we heard their story, and a little bit about their story is that they, the detention centers where people go kind of in that in-between stage of whether they're going to get deported or whether they're going to be able to seek asylum, they were just too crowded. And so one of the people involved with ICE decided to reach out to the bishop of the Methodist Church in the Arizona region and asked, like, is there any place for people to go? And so this church that we stayed at was like, yeah, absolutely. Like, here, this is our space. We want to let people stay here, essentially. And so right away, like, walking into this building, there was just, like, so much being done already. And, yeah, to share that space throughout the week with these people who were just, like, having some of the worst moments of their lives and sort of, like, living in this unknown space was a wow moment for me.
I think the first wow moment for me was was a little bit later in the trip. And so the first wow moment for me was when we were in Nogales, Mexico, and we visited a shelter for those who had been recently deported from, mostly it was the Tucson or Phoenix region. So it was a shelter that provided a meal and a night stay, possibly multiple night stays. And so San Juan Bosco is the name of this organization. And who we interacted with were men. It was mostly men who had been recently deported. And we got the opportunity to speak with the gentleman who essentially runs the place, runs the shelter. And it became evident to us that, well, let's see, let me think. I think the moment that stood out in that visit, we got to speak with those who had been recently deported, hear a little bit of their story, which of course was moving, but I think the wow moment for me in that was speaking with the gentleman who runs the shelter, because he and his family run the shelter themselves. And all of it comes, all of the funding and taking care of these people comes from the family's money. So he has a son that's a doctor, a daughter that is a lawyer, and another child that is a psychologist that works with the shelter. And they completely volunteer their time to be there and to fix meals. His wife was there. Another friend of theirs was there. They prepare these meals for these people who have just recently been basically dumped across the border by the customs. And this is done out of their own dime. And the way that this begun was he got a call from his brother-in-law one evening, and he noticed that there were all of these people on the side of the street without homes. The gentleman who ran San Juan Bosco noticed these people outside of his business in the pouring rain, and noticed all of these people. He was driving around, and he noticed people in the park, and it was pouring. So he calls up his brother-in-law, he calls up his sister, and he says, we have to do something. We have to house these people. And he housed, like, 300 people or something between him and his extended family that evening. And that's how it all started, was that he saw this need. He saw these people who had just been dumped at the border, who needed a home, who had no place to go. It was the middle of the beginning of the evening, pouring rain, had no transportation, fed them and gave them a place to sleep for the evening. And it just, like, kept snowballing into this huge, huge philanthropic endeavor that it was the wow moment for me, because it was just completely selfless.
How big was the shelter?
How many men do you think were in that chapel? Probably around 75, 50?
Yeah.
So there were probably about 75 or 50 men in the chapel when we visited. And behind that was a room of beds that they could sleep in. It wasn't a huge facility,
mm-hmm.
but what was coming out of there was the biggest, huge impact.
I think for me, there are so many moments that sit with me, and even just as I go about my everyday life, I'm just constantly, like, thinking about something that happened, or something that I read, or something that I can now apply, like when I see a story in the news about something going on with immigration reform. I can kind of connect those pieces, and a lot of it has to do with this theme of storytelling, and the way that we saw stories become sacred throughout the course of the trip. So I'm thinking about the shelter that Matt was talking about. One of the people that we spoke to, his name is Jorge, and he had just gotten deported the day prior, I think, that we talked to him, and he had originally came to Arizona with his parents when he was 13 and had lived there for 15 years. And then one day recently, he was picked up by Border Patrol because he couldn't afford to renew his work permit. And so, like, his story is one example, and just, like, what he went through, like, leaving his four kids back in Arizona and sort of returning to this place that is kind of his home, but also is very much foreign to him. That's one of the stories that will stick with me. So one of the things that we did, one of the major parts of the trip, was we went on a hike to the border in Walker Canyon, and it was like a 10-mile hike total. And along the way, we were sort of seeing these, like, pieces of people's possessions that they left along the way, or they dropped, or somehow they just sort of, like, ended up in the desert where we were hiking. And just being able to see how each of those, like, articles of clothing, or each of those pieces of trash or empty water bottles, those were pieces of people's story, and to be able to sit with that and to, like, walk past it and see those really personal parts of people's lives was really important to me, and really yeah, really encompassed that theme of story.
I think along the same page, one thing that sits with me is while we were going through the Walker Canyon, we saw those pieces of people's stories. And we also met an artist who did a lot of these same hikes. And along the way, she'd pick up these pieces and she'd make artwork out of them that told a story, glimpses of a story. And the way that she kind of put these pieces together, what would be considered trash in some way was telling a story. Canned tuna is one of the things that these migrants pack with them because it's affordable and it doesn't expire easily. So they carry these tin cans. So she made art out of it in such a way that this is sustenance for these migrants. Like, this means life or death in many ways. And so I continue to sit with that, the way that people continue to tell the stories. The other thing I sit with is we visited with this organization in Nogales, and we stayed there the evening with an organization called APAC. So we spent the evening at this organization called APAC, and what they're trying to do is they do many things within the Nogales community, which is very poor community. They focus on children and families, and they are encouraging kids to stay within the community. So they want them to continue education. They want them to take pride in their community. And it's evident that they're impacting people, children, and people on a personal level, and they stay within the community to enrich it. So that these type of organizations exist, and that people are cultivating a spirit of community there. So I think I continue to sit with that, and I continue to sit with the artist. And I'm also struck, I mean, we see stories after story after story after story of immigration reform and the wild misconceptions that people may have, and also that many times people don't understand that people's lives are attached to these immigration reforms. And I think especially continuing to sit with that and the way that it affects children and families, these immigration reforms are a complete disregard for many of them are a complete disregard for the humanity of people and the lives that are at stake. So I think those are the three things that I continue to sit with.
I think to kind of add to what you had just talked about with the idea that people's lives are at stake and how quickly that can get dismissed. I guess this is also something that sits with me today, but we went to the courthouse in Arizona and watched Operation Streamline take place, which the name itself kind of says a lot about the process. They bring in 8 people at a time and go through their entire court proceedings in a matter of moments. 8 people at a time, and then after that, all of them just kind of get shipped away. And that to me was, and then they bring more people in, and we were there for 2 or 3 hours and just watched that happen over and over again. A lot of people didn't speak the language or couldn't understand the translations or had other difficulties understanding what was going on. We didn't even understand what was going on as most of us native English speakers. And so to not understand the legal jargon in your own language, but then, I can't even imagine what it would be like for someone who doesn't speak that language. So Operation Streamline is something that makes it very apparent that the lives of these people just don't get treated like a human life. And I think that's important to recognize and to keep with me as I continue doing what I'm going to be doing.
Yeah, and added to that, with Operation Streamline, it's been a... for a little while, they were just in this Operation Streamline, they were doing second-time offenders. So those who had crossed the border before had been deported. This was like a repeat offender, quote-unquote, repeat offender type of thing. And since the current administration has been pushing for stronger deterrence in immigration reform, this process is now even for first-time offenders. So during that process, a lot of people didn't even speak Spanish, and they had a Spanish translator there speaking Spanish to these people who don't know Spanish. And they were assigned kind of a court-issued lawyer who has been paid big bucks to feed them when to say yes, when to say guilty, when to leave, when to stand up, when to be escorted out. It was just so scripted and just a huge, disgusting violation of due process that you're guaranteed in America. And it was, that continues to sit with me, that a lot of times we hear about supposed loopholes in the immigration process when it's evident that these loopholes are advantageous for a policy reform in which people are treated as, it almost felt like they were like herding people into this courtroom, treated as non-human. And so when it comes to these quote-unquote loopholes that are an obvious violation of due process, it seems valid. It seems justified in some way.
So, one of the meaningful things that I learned and kind of continue to relearn as I think about the experience, one of the days we met with Margot Cowan, who is an attorney, an immigration attorney, and she's also just this, like, incredibly brilliant, badass woman. And she told us, she said that if each of us bring our individual gifts to the table, it will be so full that it will overflow. And so thinking about the experience that we had and the people that we got to talk to, I was struck by the different ways that all of these different peoples from all of these different backgrounds do ministry, and how each of those seemingly like small gifts or passions that these people have really like come together to make an impact on what they're doing, and make an impact on the people's lives who they're affecting. So, like, the gift of, like, hospitality, people are like, well, all I can do is cook. But that, when you add that into this collective pot of artists and of border mappers and of trail guides and all of these different people put together, like, that's what ministry looks like. And being here at the School of Theology, we think about, sometimes it just seems like it's like a school for pastors, or academics or whatever, but the different ways that ministry can be embodied in a group of people with who are not afraid to put their gifts on the table, is really meaningful to me.
Oh, okay. Something that was really unexpected was the tremendous amount of hospitality that we received as visitors. Everywhere we went, we were fed, and people wanted to speak with us, and just the general sense of hospitality that was shown to us. Our first night there, Karen Zentenio's family had us over for a huge meal, and it was the entire family was there to greet us. The entire family spent the whole day cooking, and they had a table laid out for us with place settings and made some of the most delicious food I've ever had in my life. And then when we were at IPAC in Nogales, we were greeted with lunch. And then a few hours later, we had dinner. So it was this constant... A piñata. They had a piñata out for us to celebrate us coming, filled with candy. It was just a tremendous amount of hospitality. The church that hosted us, the people who visited us and explained their role within the lives of these migrants, constant hospitality shown to us. So that was really striking, that people can still be hospitable. And the other thing that was very striking to me was the tremendous amount of hope that these people carried who worked with the migrants. People who were lawyers, people who were artists, people who were cartographers. Yeah, running the shelters, people who were running the shelter, cartographers. Is that what a mapmaker is called? A cartographer? Is that right?
I can't remember. I thought he was a geologist, but then he did border mapping.
Yeah.
Maybe?
Yeah. So there was just this tremendous amount of hospitality shown to us in that they explained what they were doing, their own, what's at stake for them in the process and why they do it. Just a complete vulnerability to, but wait, I'm digressing for what I was going to talk about. Oh, with all of these people that we met who were so closely tied to helping these migrants, there was a tremendous amount of hope that they carried. It was evident in the way that they spoke about the work that they did. It was evident in the way that they treated us, the way that they treated the migrant. They carried with them, and it was more than optimism. It was a deep-seated hope and a deep-seated vision for the future that was completely unexpected for me. So I carry that with me because I am sometimes faced with great pessimism in what the potential is for reform. And so with carrying their optimism now and sitting with that still, thinking about their hope that they carry, because it was way more than optimism, is enriching in some ways, and that just kind of sustains my own call to ministry, and the way that I approach ministry has become different because of their selflessness and their hope, I think. It was like the idea of a community sustaining something so much greater than themselves that while we're in seminary, we're doing so much more than just training to be pastors or nonprofit leaders or activists or whatever we're learning, but that we're trying to create connections so that the needs of the world can be met, really. And I think that really became evident while we were there, that this was like in action. Yeah. We were able to witness it.
And we have to do it together, too.
Mm-hmm.